Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries over the internet worldwide. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Tonight's program, The Food Crisis, when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of this global 2000 New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now, our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, and the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. That's correct. That's 90% over the next 50 years. That's why I contend that we ought not to waste our time deluding ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in their insane scheme to enslave the world and impose a worldwide tyranny, this new world order, upon all of us. But you and I do not have to participate in our own demise. We do not have to help them. We do not have to finance them. And we don't have to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. Let's prepare to live through and survive this global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, we've been talking about this thing called the food crisis. It's being reported in the New York Times every now and again. Katie and Brian tell us about it, or Charlie, on the CBS or ABC Evening News. This inflation fears and food shortages has been taking front and center stage. I thought it's time to take a look at it in the view of Bible prophecy because while it's news today, it's a history as far as Bible prophecy is concerned. Moses that first broached the subject in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, talking about a worldwide famine. World famine. Now, famines, as I've mentioned in previous programs, have always been regional or local for the last 3,000 or 4,000 years. Famines go on all the time. Famine isn't anything new. That's old news. Hell, that's been going on. What we have never seen before is the specter of worldwide famine, and that's what's upon us right now. 40 countries in the world today are short of food, don't have enough to feed their populations. 20 million people a year are dying from starvation. That's up from 15 million, which is the historic average been going on for the last, 50 years. 10 million, I remember back in the 1950s and 60s, and then jumped up to 15 million in the 70s and 80s, jumped up to 20 million now. Well, there's 100 million people being born every year and added to the world's population. 20 million people die from starvation every year. Those are pretty significant numbers. We're getting into the proximity of biblical terms, and Revelation chapter 6 is the chapter that talks about really, really big biblical terms. And the last time I brought up the subject of hoarding, you know, we're starting to see people hoard rice. Well, we haven't seen hoarding on any great scale because when hoarding develops, then we have to have a rationing system put into place. And you can rest assured that government will jump right into the middle of it, and government is going to give us rationing. Well, listen to this. There have been numerous media reports about food shortages around the world and resulting in riots caused by empty store shelves. Usually missing from these reports, though, is the reason for these food shortages. The problem is not agricultural, but it's monetary. In other words, the problem is not too few food staples, but too much money, or too much fiat paper currency, to be precise. To contrast to the classical gold standard, there is today no discipline on the creation of money, with the consequence that it is being created to excess. Rising prices of all goods and services are the inevitable result, and what's worse, surging inflation has become a global scourge. All currencies are being inflated, and only the rate of debasement is different from one country to the next. In an inflationary environment, it is basic common sense that soaring prices will empty store shelves. This outcome is also the experience of countless inflationary episodes throughout history. People will naturally dump the depreciating currency in favor of tangible, useless assets, and basic staples are high on the list of things to acquire with worthless fiat money. Now, the following table of commodity prices is from April 24, 2008. It's the print edition of The Economist magazine. Let's note the monthly and annual increases for food. So if you've got your pencil and paper out there, boys and girls, jot this down so that you can tell your husband tonight over the dinner table, guess what? Guess what? If you take a look at all items over the past 1 month, that is April of 2008, they have risen by 3.7% in 1 month. So if we take 3.7 times 12, it gives us 44.4% annual price rate rises or increases. That's just for 1 month. Now, that's the month of April 2008. You got that number down, 44.4, just 444, 44.4. 3.7% a month, 12, 24, 36. That's a phenomenal rate of inflation, wouldn't you say? Now, that's not projected. That's already past tense as I speak. That's what we had last month in the United States of America. It's 44.4% annualized. Now, the difference in price increase between April of 2007 and April of 2008, past tense, is 31%. The actual inflation rate, price increase, dollar index of all items in the United States of America, 31% in 1 year. We've never seen anything like that before. You know, I'm pushing 70, kids. I haven't seen anything like that. Food. Last month, the price of food went up 4.2%. Just in 30 days, from April 1st to April 30th, the price increase in food in the United States of America is up 4.2%. Let's plug it in. 4.2 times 12 equals 50.4%. Now, that's down from the actual one-year increase between April 1st of 2007 and April 1st of 2008. The price increase was 69%. So if it continues on at today's rate, that means that it's going to improve by 19%. It's only going to be 50%. The price of food is going to go up by 50%. So if you're paying $4.38 for a gallon of milk today, 4.38 times 0.50, it's going to cost you $2.19 more to buy that same gallon of milk next year. It's going to cost you about $6.57. I got an article here that says the $6 loaf of bread coming next year, $6 a loaf. Now, here in the United States, you know, we're sitting here complaining about it. Hell, we're only spending 20% of our incomes on food to start with. I mentioned to you last time, most of the people in the world are spending 50 to 80% of everything they create and produce goes just buying food. Those people are going to starve first. Now, if you take a look at gold, the price of gold went up 34%. Price of food went up 69%. If you look at oil, the price of oil last month, 30 days, went up 17% in 30 days. It went up 84% over April of last year. Now, boys and girls, those are pretty significant price increases, and those are going to result in pretty significant depreciations of your standard of living. You know, the way we've been living over the last 20, 30, 40 years can change. Well, not for everybody. You know, some people make a lot of money, and they can continue eating the way they've always eaten. And they'll, you know, $6 gas is no big deal, you know, if you're making $100,000, $300,000 a year. But if you're making $10,000, $20,000, $40,000 a year, $6 gas makes a hell of a difference. That's a big deal. $6 bread to a guy making $200,000, $300,000 a year, it's no big deal. But $6 bread to a guy making $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year, that is a big, big deal. So I want to talk to you about what are we going to do, you and me. You know, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, because all of us are going to live through this whether we like it or not. Some of us may die before we live through it, but some of us will live through it. And our standard of living is going to take a hit. Let's see. Can we continue to eat meat, milk, butter, and eggs just like we have in the past? And I say, yeah, we can. We're going to have to get out and go to work, but yeah, we can. We Americans used to be able to work. Don't you kid yourself. I was raised in an era when an American could get out and he could weed, he could milk a cow, he could sweat. An American could produce his own food and fiber. It happened in this country. It isn't true anymore. Most of you people out there couldn't can a cow. You probably wouldn't know what to do with 500 pounds of tomatoes. I mean, if I came over and I just dropped on your porch 500 pounds of tomatoes right now, ready to can, most of you people would not know what the hell to do with them. And that's why most Americans just buy one or two tomatoes at a time. It's all they know how to handle. Which brings up the subject of hoarding. You know, all of a sudden, how much is too much? Is 500 pounds of tomatoes too much? And 1 pound of tomatoes, that's the right amount? Well, 1 pound of tomatoes is what you need today. It's Monday, and so you're going to go to the grocery store, buy two tomatoes, and bring them home. And then when you've consumed the two tomatoes, you'll go back on Wednesday, and you'll buy two more tomatoes, and you'll bring them home. And then maybe on Friday or Saturday, you'll go to the store and buy two tomatoes and bring them home. The thought that you might buy six tomatoes on Monday is probably more than you can handle. The idea that you might buy a whole year's supply of tomatoes, that is six tomatoes times 52 weeks, would be 312 tomatoes. What would you do with 312 tomatoes? Would you know how to preserve them? They perish rapidly. Do you know how to process them? Do you know how to can them? Do you know how to dry them? I mean, the average American wouldn't have a clue. I'm not even sure that the average American woman today can cook. You eat in the restaurants. You buy TV dinners. You buy prepared foods and stick it in the microwave and bring it out and say, wow, what a wonderful meal. I microwaved it. You open the door, you stick it in, you close the door, you push the buttons. You sit down, you read a magazine. 15 minutes later, you come back, open the door. Here's dinner. Now, we pay for that. That kind of convenience costs money. And I'm not telling you that it's bad for you. Hell, if you can afford it, get after it. But, you know, what if, you know, just what if you're not working, you don't have a job, and all of a sudden these necessities like microwavable meals in 15 minutes are suddenly priced out of your ability to pay? Do you go hungry? Do you stand in a food line for crying out loud with your hand out begging? Or could you get off your dead ass and go to work and provide for yourself? And if you do that and plant 6 tomato plants, you're going to end up with 300, 400, 500 pounds of tomatoes. Now, what are you going to do with them? People complain a lot about the high prices, but what if I told you you could have meat year-round? I mean, you could have meat at every meal for less than half what you're paying today, maybe 25%. I'll show you how to do that here in a minute. You know, there was a time in America when we didn't have refrigerators, and I think that refrigerators added to our demise. I can remember as a kid, we had a cooler on the north side of the house, and we canned. You know, when the tomatoes came in, my grandmother would pick the tomatoes, bring them in the house, she'd prepare them, and she'd put them on the stove, she'd can them. Sometimes 6-8 jars at a time, 2 jars, 4 jars, no big deal. Just part and parcel of her process in a daily routine. The 69% increase in food prices over the past year makes a mockery of government-reported price indices. Their bogus reports obviously understate the true rate of monetary debasement. Well, you can say that again. There isn't any numbers coming out of Washington or out of your state capital that are reliable any longer. Haven't been now for a couple of 3 years, probably longer than that. There is, of course, another problem causing food shortages, and no, it is not the speculators being so roundly blamed by the media. Government, or governments, to be more precise, is again the cause. Many of them are acting in ways that cause food shortages. I want to underline that. Remember I told you about these 545 people in Washington? Many of these problems that we have are caused by those politicians. They're caused by those politicians. Price controls and other blunders of foolhardy governments have disrupted the market process. If there were no government meddling and markets were left unfettered, the market process would competently and economically allocate resources, goods, and services. This point is skillfully addressed in a recent article by Sean Corrigan, posted at the Mises Institute. That's www.mises.org/story2952. 2952 is the story. That's www.mises.org/story/2952. Now, so far, the food shortages and riots have occurred in countries with the worst inflation and the most stringent government controls. Let me repeat that. So far, in the 40 countries that are now suffering from food shortages, they have occurred in those countries that have the worst inflation and the most stringent government controls. But I expect these occurrences of shortages to broaden as inflation worsens. This point is being demonstrated by events presently taking place in the United States. Shortages of a few basic staples are now developing. Now, you can rest assured that as the inflation continues, people will trade their money for the staples. There's only 2% now, 2% of the goods on the shelf compared to the money in circulation. And it's getting worse every day because Ben Bernanke is printing more money every day. That means that if everybody in America walked into the Walmart store and then picked up the stuff and walked over to the checkout counter, they'd be out of goods with just 2% of the money out there. So if you've got $100 in your pocket and all of us went into the store, we all get $2 worth of goods, assuming that we all shared and shared equally, which is why I brought up the subject of hoarding, because, you know, right away, somebody says, oh, a gasp like Judy Hartson, you know, oh, he's a hoarder. In the last program, I said, I got 200 cans of coffee. I said that one time in a class, and the guy said, why are you hoarding coffee? The word hoarding is a communist term for share the shortage. To their minds, what this means is if you've got an abundance of something, there's something wrong with that. If you've got more than 2 tomatoes on Monday, there's something wrong with you. You just buy 2 tomatoes on Monday, and then you drive to the store, and you buy 2 tomatoes on Wednesday, and then you go to the store on Friday, and you buy 2 more tomatoes. I don't know where in the hell these people's heads are. You're going to drive to the store, aren't you? 3 times a week, you people are driving to the store. I'm an old man, and I'm cheap. And when the price of gasoline went from $1.50 to $3, I started driving half as much. I used to go to Springfield once a week. Now I go twice a month. And when the price of gas goes to $6 a gallon, I will go once a month. That's what the marketplace does. The marketplace sends me a signal. It says, do you want to spend your money on gasoline or do you want to spend your money on something more intelligent? Yesterday, I had two bulls that I needed butchered. So I called the butcher. You know, I'm getting old and lazy now. I usually butcher them myself, but I'm getting lazy. So I called the butcher and I said, hey, I got two bulls over here and I need to have them butchered. And he said, okay, well, let's do this. I said, now, who can haul them for me? He says, well, I got old Joe over here. And old Joe charges $3 a mile, $3 a loaded mile to bring them over. So I told the butcher, I said, I'm going to send one this week and then I'll send one next week. Until he told me that the price was $3 a loaded mile. And I said, wait a minute, $3 a mile? And he said, yeah, I'm sorry to report to you, Mr. Gordon, that because of the rising price of diesel, which is now over $4 a gallon, we've had to raise our prices from $2.25 to now $3 a loaded mile. I said, oh. I said, okay. Well, then here's what we'll do. Can you handle two animals this week? He said, well, it'd be a strain. I said, well, let's strain because we're going to load two of them. And so when the trucker came over, now ordinarily I would send one this week and one next week. It would be easier on me because then I'd have to, you know, instead of having to go over there and pick up 1,200 pounds of meat, that's a lot of meat. So now I got to go over and buy, you know, I got to go over and, normally I like to go over and pick up one animal, 600 pounds, but I'm going to have to go over and pick up two animals, be 1,200. But here's the moral to the story. The marketplace sent me a signal. It said the price of diesel went from $2 to $4, and the price of shipping went from $2.25 to $3. And so instead of sending one this week and one next week, I'll send them both this week. So instead of spending, and I would have spent $165 this week and $165 next week, which would have been, you know, $300 and some odd at $2.25. Now that the price went to $3, I'll send both of them this week, and I'll spend $150 per animal. So I'm actually going to save money by sending both of them this week. The marketplace sent me a signal. And then I said, okay, I understand the signal. Prices are going up, so we have to cut back. That's how simple that is. I don't go to the grocery store and waste my money on gasoline and mileage buying two tomatoes. When I go to the store to buy something, I buy it by the case. I buy it by the pallet. I buy it by the truckload or something, you know, but I don't buy two tomatoes. Now, we got into that habit in the big cities. We got refrigerators. You know, we didn't need to can anymore. We didn't need to prepare. But now, this costs a lot of money. When you're paying somebody to package little packages for you so that you can stick them in the microwave, you're paying about 5, 6, 8, 10 times more than the actual food costs. Did you know that? I'm going to give you some numbers here in a minute, and I'll show you how that works. Now, you can rest assured that when shortages develop, which is caused by government policy and by a government printing press, they will introduce rationing, which is going to exacerbate the problem, which is what I told you last time. As soon as there's a shortage, everybody rushes in to buy up the dwindling supply, which now causes an even worse supply, which now says we got to have rationing. The rationing sends a signal to the marketplace that says stop producing. I went through this price control crap with Richard Nixon back in the early 70s. You know, when they took us off gold, we had this god-awful inflation. And so we were in the contracting business. Our business was to buy a building and then renovate it, raise the rents, refinance it, and then sell the building. They put on rent controls. How many apartments do you think we renovated when we were locked in to rent controls at $65 a month? Not a single one. I laid off all the crew. We didn't spend another dollar. You've got rent controls in New York City. You've got slums all over New York City. Why? Because you got rent controls, dummies. You got rationing. Nobody builds anything in New York. It's too expensive, and there's no return. We go to Houston, Texas to do that. Now, as soon as government introduces this rationing, you're going to have shortages exacerbated by the rationing. Stand in line and share the shortage. Now, the Ten Commandments creates a great abundance. If you want abundance, we practice the Ten Commandments. If you want a shortage, you practice the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. We Americans had a choice to make. Ten Commandments, Communist Manifesto. So we chose communism. And now we're having the same shortages that the Russians and Chinese had when they practiced communism. And when the Russians and the Chinese quit practicing communism and opened their markets up to let the marketplace take control of it, the Russians are putting in. Last week, the Russians made $10 billion. Did you know that? The Russians, the people that went bankrupt and broke in 1989 to 91, whose economy collapsed, the old Soviet Union, made $10 billion, that's spelled with a B, boys and girls, $10 billion last week. They've got the third highest foreign reserves in the world. I think China's number one, Japan's number two, Russia's number three. They got $550 billion, $500 billion in the bank. $500 billion the Russians do. They were flat-ass broke here 20 years ago. Then they got off communism, went into the market, the free market, and they've just made nothing but money. We Americans who had a free market went into communism and lost our shirt. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but I'm not going to practice communism with the rest of you people out there. I'm going to practice the Ten Commandments. It pays a lot better. Unfortunately, this guy goes on, he says, unfortunately, the response by some stores has not been constructive. Rather than increasing the price of goods being demanded, they are unilaterally acting to limit purchases by their customers. Perhaps they have been asked to take these restrictive steps by government agencies. Regardless of their motivation, these actions further disrupt the market process. With the ongoing printing of fiat currency by governments around the world, inflation will worsen. Therefore, it's logical to conclude that there will be more so-called shortages of food and other basic items. This is put out by James Turk, by the way. He's an economist. Let me give you that number again for James Turk. Can I get that one for you? No, I can't. Go to James Turk, T-U-R-K, see what you can get on James Turk. But he was citing this from an article called www.mises.org/story.2952. I'll give you a little bit to go on there. Let me stick that over on that pile. And now we got the $6 loaf of bread. Let me give you a reminder here, and we'll talk about the $6 loaf of bread and the hoarding problem that we're going to face here shortly. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And let's see here. If I can get the right page, here we go. The last page. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us directly, 417-273-4967. All right, we are back talking about the food crisis. $6 loaf of bread's coming up. The $6 gallon of gas is coming up. And that's because Ben Bernanke and your government, those 545 people in Washington, want it that way. Not that it's good for me, not that it's good for you, or good for America, or good for the world, or anybody else, but it's good for the politicians, it's good for certain businesses, it's good for big corporations, it's good for the New World Order program. Now, I raised to your attention here the story of hoarding. Remember I said in the last program I got 200 cans of coffee? Some guy says, oh, you're a hoarder. You're hoarding coffee. I said, well, a lot of other people, they hoard other things. For instance, I've never heard anybody complain about Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett has $30 billion. I don't. You don't. Do we sit here and say, well, that dirty, low-down, no-good SOB is a dirty money hoarder? Have you ever heard anybody call Bill Gates a money hoarder? I'm called a coffee hoarder because I got 200 cans of coffee, but I never heard anybody call Bill Gates a money hoarder because he's got $30 or $40 or $50 billion. How much is enough? First question out of that we've got to answer here is, how much is enough? Evidently, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett do not have enough money because they're still out working, making more money. I am. I don't have enough money. I don't know how much money I need. I don't know how much money is enough. I just know that I don't have enough, and so I'm still out working, and I'm still hoarding it. Hoarding it. I save it. I don't spend it all. George Bush would call me a money hoarder because he wants to send me $600. Number one, I wouldn't take the $600 if he sent it by courier. Number two, I don't need the $600. Number three, I'm going to keep working and hoarding money. I want to use the marketplace and the Ten Commandments. I don't want to take $600 from you and the taxpayers of America. I don't want to be unjustly enriched. Now, most people look at that and they say, well, that guy Gordon's some kind of a nut. I went out into the marketplace, boys and girls, and I paid full market value for the coffee that I bought. And in order for me to buy those 200 cans of coffee, I had to give up something else. I had to give up cigarettes. I used to smoke. I smoked for 9 years. I smoked Camel cigarettes. I quit smoking. And instead of spending my money on Camel cigarettes, I now spend my money on cans of coffee. I used to drink a lot. I used to drink Miller High Life. I like Miller beer. Once in a while, I drink Michelob now. From time to time, I'll buy a little beer, but I don't drink anywhere near as much as I used to, but I spend my money now on coffee instead of beer. And as I pointed out a few minutes ago, when I was faced with having to spend an extra $100 or $150 to transport my second bull to the butcher, I put both of them in the same load and saved $150. I respond to the marketplace. I don't want rationing. I don't care if the price of diesel goes to $30 a gallon. If that's what it takes, I guess that's what it takes. But let me tell you that when the price of diesel goes to $30 a gallon, I'm going to use a lot less of it. And you want to know something? You're going to use a lot less of it too. Now, diesel in England is selling for $10.40 a gallon, $10.40 a gallon. The people in England are paying $10.40 for what we pay $4 over here for. I suspect that we're going to be paying $10.40 for diesel here one of these days. $6 is the next horizon. I mean, that's what they've got targeted. That's in the pipeline. That's in the bag. You're going to be paying $6 a gallon for gas very shortly. Not this year. Not in 2008. Nobody's going to allow that here. We got an election going on here. When that election's over, grab your hind end, boys and girls, because here it comes. But I wanted to answer this question on hoarding, because hoarding is a communist term. In the Bible, God talks about an abundance of everything. In fact, in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, remember these two famous penal clause chapters? He starts off both chapters and he says, here's what I'm going to give you. If you practice the Ten Commandments, I'll give you all of these benefits. I'll give you all this abundance. But if you don't, then here's what I'm going to do to you. Now, we didn't, and so here's what's coming. This inflation, food shortages, high prices, famines that are coming as a result, cause and effect relationship. But I want to tell a little story over here. It's called the parable of the sower. No, excuse me, parable of the vineyard. Parable of the vineyard. It's in Matthew chapter 20. And in this story, this parable here, reads like this. This is Jesus now. You know, sweet Jesus, all you Christians can listen to this. Comes out of the New Testament. It's okay. You can listen to this. For the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And when he had agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into the vineyard. And he went out about the third hour, and he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, go you also into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, I'll give you. And they went their way. Again, he went out the sixth hour and the ninth hour and did likewise. And about the 11th hour, he went out and found others standing idle and said to them, why stand you here idle all day? Let me pause right here. Why do you stand here idle all day? Why don't you people get out and go to work? Boys and girls, if you've got time to stand in the unemployment office, you've got time to go out and work. If you've got time to stand around waiting for a handout, then you've got spare and idle time to go to work. And so instead of working for B.F. Goodrich or Goodyear or General Motors, why don't you work for yourself? Why don't you go out and plant a garden? Why don't you go out and harvest your own tomatoes and peppers and cabbage and cauliflower? Instead of complaining about the high prices, why don't you produce your own? You know, it's worth $10,000 a year to you. $10,000 a year. You know, instead of buying, you know, lean cuisine that you stick in the microwave, you put some seeds in the ground, and then you go out. Oh, that's right, that's demeaning. To sweat, that's demeaning. Well, he asked these guys, why are you standing here idle? And they said to him, because no man has hired us. And he said to them, well, go you into the vineyard, and whatsoever is right, that shall you receive. So when the evening was come, the workday is over, the Lord of the vineyard said unto the steward, he said, call the laborers and give them their hire, beginning from the last to the first. So when they came, they all lined up that were hired about the 11th hour, and they received every man a penny, a day's wage. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more, and they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured against the good man of the house. Here come the communists, you know, here comes the shop steward over there. Hey, we've got an unfair labor practice going on over here. And they said, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and you have made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and the heat of the day. But the householder answered one of them, and he said, friend, I do you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a penny? Take that which is yours and go your way, and I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with my own? Is your eye evil because I am good? So the last shall be first, and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. This is the essence of private property. This is the manifestation of the Ten Commandments. This is the implementation of thou shalt not steal. Private property. Is it not lawful for me to do with mine whatsoever I will? Why do you point to me and say, Gordon, you're a hoarder because you've got 200 cans of coffee? Sir, have I taken any can of coffee from you? Have I stolen anything from you? We're not coffee cans in the marketplace for you to buy as well as for me. I didn't buy beer, cigarettes, and gasoline. I bought coffee. So why do you say to me now that my eye is evil because I've bought coffee and have 200 cans? Now I tell you, boys and girls, what you're dealing with here are the communists, and the communists always stand in line to share the shortage. It's been that way for 5,000 years. Why would it change tomorrow, next week, or next month? We have an election going on here in the United States. We're going to have a change. George Bush, maybe there'll be a change. I don't know if there's going to be an election. We're talking about having an election in this country. I'm not sure there's going to be one, but let's assume that there is. Then they're going to have a new president next year. Do you think that the president next year is going to change any of the policies that have been going on since 1920? Do you think those 545 people in our Congress are going to change? Well, I don't believe it, and I'm not planning or preparing for it. If you want to dream these silly dreams, go ahead. I think we need to get prepared for tough times. I think we've got inflation coming number one, deflation coming number two, and we're going to have a god-awful famine number three. And I'm not talking about Ethiopia and Biafra. I'm talking about California, Washington, Florida, and New York. And why do I say that? Bible prophecy tells me that. And number two, the marketplace tells me that. History and the marketplace tells me that. And so in the Great Depression of the 1930s, great fortunes were made. Great fortunes were made by people who took a look and said, oh my God, the Roaring Twenties are coming to an end. This isn't going to go on forever. Now let's take a look here at disappearing amber grain, or waves of grain. New York Times columnist Paul Krugman was weighing in on the looming worldwide food crisis by admitting that it's no longer looming, it's already here. In his April the 7th op-ed column, Grains Gone Wild, which I reported to you last time, Krugman analyzes the various reasons why things have gotten all the way to rice riots in Asia and wheat riots in Egypt, but finally settles on demon ethanol and other biofuels as the true underlying culprit. Oh, no, no, no. Wait a minute. Now, it's the policy coming out of the United States of America that's created this problem worldwide. And it's been going on for, 80 or 90 years. This isn't something that just started in the last week or two, or the last month or two. It's a policy of depopulating the land of its farmers and putting in a system that we now call agribusiness. That's what the real problem is. Hey, listen, if the agribusinessmen want to plant ethanol, they want to plant corn, what's that to us? I'm not sitting here complaining about Archer Daniels Midland building another biofuels plant. Hell, if ADM wants to go out and build a biofuels plant and use all the corn in America to make ethanol, I don't care. After all, isn't it their land? Isn't it their business? Isn't it their corn? So why would we complain? Why do you complain about the price of corn? Why don't you go out and grow your own corn? Oh, I live in the city and I'm in a condominium. Who in the hell put you there? Did some guy at Archer Daniels Midland stick a gun in your head and say you march off to the city and live in a condominium? That was a choice that you had to make, Bob. You made it. We all made that choice. I know that because I lived in the city. I lived on the farm, and I was working for a guy named Lindy LaFranchi, and he was paying me $300 a month in board and room. Had plenty of money. I had an airplane. I was burning up airplane gas at 42 cents a gallon, having the time of my life. And I said, I ain't getting paid enough money here on this farm. Here I am working 12 hours a day. Well, I know what I'll do. I'm going to go to the city and cut a fat hog in the back. And I made a choice. And I told Mr. LaFranchi, I said, I'm moving to the city, Lindy, and I'm going to cut a fat hog in the back. And I moved to Alameda, California, Oakland, San Francisco Bay Area. I went to work for International Harvester for $3.28 an hour. And there I was. Working away, making money. And then I had to pay rent. And then I had to buy food in the grocery store. Worked out pretty well. I wouldn't complain about it. I was getting paid top dollar and everything was going along fine. But I discovered something. I couldn't save any money. I couldn't afford to fly an airplane. It took everything that I made just to live there in the city. Oh, it was a nice place. No mud. It's all concrete and asphalt. And air conditioned. Everything is great in the city. City living is wonderful. I mean, if you can afford it, I recommend it. You should live in the city. If you can afford it, go do it. Lived there for a number of years. Then one day I woke up and I said, the city living isn't quite what I thought it was. So I came back out to the farm, and that's where I'm at now, and I'm back on the farm where there's mud. I gotta take my shoes off now when I come to the house. But I noticed that I live better now. And in fact, I was living better on the farm than I ever lived in the city, and I didn't know it. Because when I lived in the city, I didn't drink as much milk because I had to buy it. And I didn't eat as much meat because I had to buy it. See, those of us that live out here on the farm, we kind of take this for granted. Yeah, we kind of take this for granted. And I'm going to show you how this works. See those two bulls that I just sent off to the market? I said I'll shoot them and let them rot before I'd sell them again. So I'm going to take that meat and I'm going to can it. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take 1,200 pounds of meat. And I'm at a little higher level than most of you people out there. But let me show you how this works. Have these two bulls over here. Now, I'm going to hoard a bunch of meat. And I suspect there's going to be meat shortages coming up here pretty shortly. So I'm going to hoard this meat. These two animals were pretty good-sized animals. You got a pen and paper out here. Get your pen and paper out. I'm going to show you how to make $9,000 right quick. Just pay attention now. Get your pen and paper out here. I'm going to show you how to make money. These two animals over here, I'm just going to take one as an example. It weighs 1,200 pounds. And you get about 50% off of an animal. You take him over, you butcher him, you got the hide, you throw that away, you got the bones, you throw that away, you got the head, you throw that away, you got the guts, you throw that away. When you get all through butchering this animal, you're going to get about 600 pounds of meat. Now, some animals aren't as thrifty as others, and you don't get as much off of them, so I'm going to knock off another 100 pounds, and I'm just going to get 500 pounds of meat off this animal. There'll be a full 500 pounds, okay? Now, I'm going to take that 500 pounds, and I'm going to cut that down another 100 pounds because I'm going to bone it, and I'm going to turn it into beef. I'm just going to build beef cubes, about 1 inch square, 400 pounds of it. And I'm going to take that 400 pounds of meat, and I'm going to can it. Now, it happens that my animals are all organic, and if you want to take a look at the price of canned organic beef, just, you know, dial it up on Google, look for organic beef, and then read them and weep. Now, most of you people couldn't afford that if your lives depended on it, being unemployed and all, standing in the unemployment line, smoking Marlboros and drinking Bud. But 400 pounds will fit into 200-quart jars. And then my wife and I are going to can that. And I'm going to put 200 jars, that is 1-quart jars, on my shelf. And you people are going to say, "Well, you dirty hoarder. Well, you're hoarding all that meat." Excuse me, partner, but the last time I checked, there wasn't any lines down here at the supermarket. Far as I know, there's still beef available out there, you know, if you want to buy it. I don't know how much beef is enough. I want you to write me an email and tell me how much is enough. Because I happened to be over in the store the other day, and I picked up a can of corned beef, and it was $5.40 for 6 ounces. That translates into roughly $15 a pound. And that stuff ain't organic. That's just Argentine beef that came off the pampas and or off of some feedlot up here. They're feeding them Stilbestrol or Aramycin, Terramycin, a bunch of other crap. But you know, I've got organic beef here. Mine's worth a little bit more, but I'm not even gonna price that in. I'm just gonna take right off the store shelf here. I saw it in Food for Less, $5.40, 6 ounces, right at $15 a pound. Now there's 2 pounds of meat that goes into one of these 2-quart jars. Now $15 a pound, and there's 2 pounds in there. Make each one of those jars worth $30 each, and I got 200 jars. 200 jars at $30 each. That's $6,000 worth of beef right there. $6,000. I'm going to put $6,000 worth of canned meat up on my shelf. My wife loves it. She says to me, "Little Georgie, I'd like to have spaghetti and meatballs tonight, and I want you to go down and get a jar of beef and get me a jar of tomato sauce." And so I go down and get the tomato sauce and the beef, and I bring it upstairs, and she mixes up the spaghetti sauce with real beef in it. And she cooks up some spaghetti, and we have spaghetti and meat sauce. Not spaghetti sauce, we have meat sauce, because we've got beef. And I eat a lot of beef, and eat all I want. I don't know if it's a lot or not, because I don't know how much is enough. Now, I know I'm a dirty hoarder, because I got 200 jars of beef on my shelf up here, and I don't know how many jars I should have, because I don't know what the official party line is. I practice the Ten Commandments, and I just have an abundance of everything. I got a gallon of cream in my refrigerator. I always tell people I measure their wealth by how much milk you have in the refrigerator or how much cream. Now, let me tell you how to do this in the last 2 or 3 minutes here. Boys and girls, you can go down to any sale barn anywhere and buy yourself a 1,200-pound bull. And it's going to cost you less than $1 a pound. But let's suppose it costs you $1 a pound for 1,200 pounds. That's $1,200. You take that $1,200 bull and you send him off to the butcher, and he'll charge you $500 to kill him. And quarter. Take that home, and you're in this animal now, $1,700. Give yourself another $300 for jars and one thing and another, and take that animal home and put up, can it yourself. Instead of standing in line with your hand out, like the people in Ohio, instead of standing in line at the unemployment office with your hand out, instead of standing in line trying to get welfare and food stamps and aid to families with dependent children, go to the sale barn, buy yourself a cow, take it home, and it'll cost you $2,000, and then you'll sell it for $6,000, or you'll put $6,000 worth of beef on your shelf, and you'll make a $4,000 profit, because that's $4,000 worth of beef that you're not going to be buying at the grocery store. Yeah, boys and girls, I don't buy any meat at the grocery store. I got my own. Now, you know, most people, they don't think about things like that. I go down and plant 6 tomato plants, and I get 400 or 500 pounds of tomatoes. Well, 12 tomato plants is what the wife plants. We get about 500 pounds of tomatoes. And my wife, we got jars of tomatoes on the shelf over here, boys and girls, that go back to 1979. I just looked at some jars the other day. They're dated 1979. Tomatoes. Still there. Still good. We don't put expiration dates on our jars when I can them. I can't speak for Swift and Armored Star or Del Monte. I don't put expiration dates on them. And I don't drive to the grocery store and buy two tomatoes either, three times a week. I go out in the garden and I pick the tomatoes off of them, and I took two or three of them, a little rotten, or they got a tomato horn worm on them, and I use them for baseballs, and I throw them at the fence post. And I just heave them. I probably throw more tomatoes away than most of you people eat in a year. That's called abundance. That comes from the Ten Commandments. That's an economic model. Now, there's another economic model. It's called communism. It's called industrial agriculture, agribusiness. It's the model that we chose. Just like I left the farm and moved to the city. It was a choice that I had to make, and I made it. And it was a god-awful big mistake. I made a mistake when I left the farm. But it wasn't anybody else's fault but mine. I'm the guy that did it. I'm the guy that made the choice. Now, instead of standing around bewailing the fact that we're sharing a shortage over here, why don't we turn over a new leaf? Let me suggest to you a new program called the Ten Commandments. A program of abundance, a program of private property. And let's start living in abundance instead of sharing the shortage. It's a wild new idea. I gotta concede, it's a wild new idea. But I took a look at this share of the shortage thing and I got tired of it. And so I said, I think I'll start dealing in abundance again, and I did. And now I can point in my refrigerator and say, I got a gallon of cream in my refrigerator, and I think you ought to have one too. In fact, I think everybody ought to have one. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard in 100 countries plus worldwide daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, nonprofit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, that does it. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.